What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
We're really excited to be talking to Ellie Valley on today's episode. Ellie is an author and artist, and his latest book is Diaspora Boy, Comics on Crisis in America and Israel. And a great sign of just how good it is that Abe Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League calls it bigoted, unfunny. Brett Steffens, the Islamophobe at the New York Times, calls it grotesque, wretched, and Commentary Magazine called him ferociously repugnant. So great reviews. Don't forget, this month our live taping is an anti-Columbus Day special. It'll be on Monday, October 9th, and our special guests will be Wendy Muse, PhD history candidate at NYU. Her research focuses on collaborative efforts between left-wing activists fighting against the military dictatorship in Brazil and colonialism in Portuguese Africa during the Cold War. And Noah Changa, a progressive Renaissance woman and the host of the podcast The Way with a Noah. Make sure you come out to the Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue, October 9th at 7 p.m. Welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. We are so excited today. We're going to be talking to Ellie Valley. He's a writer and artist. I'm being really peppy, and I'm here with my co-host,
Gabe Pacheco. What's up, Katie, man? It sounds like you've been drinking Monster Energy drinks.
And you know why I'm doing this is because my mom, big fan of the show, big friend of the show, FOTS, doesn't like the way I sound at the beginning of the show.
Really?
She told me that, yeah.
She said, put a little pep in your step.
Put a little pep in your step.
Put a little love in your heart.
She said, I don't like that because I guess I go, hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. It is kind of a downer or weird something.
Yeah, you always gotta end on an upbeat.
Upbeat, yeah.
Upbeat.
Hello, this is Katie, the Katie Halper Show.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That's you know, that lets the audience know that we are off on a good foot.
Yes, we are off on a good foot. We should do some more mixed idioms. We like to put. We want you to listen. You know what? We need you to support our Patreon so we can put food on our families. To quote George Bush.
Ooh.
And you're working hard to put food on your family.
Sounds mixed. Great.
Yeah. So
we'll send you photos of our families on tables with food. Ladled on top of them.
That would be good, actually. Ladle, dreidel, dreidel, dreidel. See, I'm up. I'm here. I'm wired. I'm queer. I'm queer allied. Queer allied.
Queer adjacent.
Queer. Well, I'm really not.
Right.
You know, it's not a choice.
Ally.
It's not a choice. You think I choose to be involved romantically with men? We're
yeah.
born this way.
Yeah, you're born with a brick-and-mortar gender identity. You wish that it was like a pop-up food cart.
That I could, like, switch
yeah,
out?
You
yeah,
you could just move in and out, change the cuisine.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this really corny Ani DiFranco song.
To me, what's more important is the person that I bring, not just getting to the same restaurant and eating the same thing.
I got spots, I got stripes, too.
I've got spots, I've got stripes.
A lot. It's okay. It's okay. This is a safe space. I did actually probably go to more Ani DiFranco concerts than any other artist.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know who she is from, like,
went,
going to BART, right?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Freshman year, there was there were a ton of Ani DiFranco fans and women with acoustic guitars.
Right.
My breast is cradled and I curve all my guitar.
In my cohort. My year.
And your.
And they would serenade us.
Really?
Yeah, they would have little mini concerts in their dorm rooms.
With both hands.
Uh-huh.
Oh, with both hands.
And walking. alone and I'll turn again.
I am walking out in the rain, and I am listening to the low moan of the dial tone again, and I am getting...
Did that bring back memories? Was it good enough to
that
make
was,
you think Ani was
I'm
there?
Having flashbacks.
Right?
PTSD.
Yeah.
And I can't let it go.
Freshman year at Bard College.
Nice. And Wesleyan, forget about it.
Boom.
I'm there. Boom, I'm there. Please make sure that you rate and review us on iTunes. And that you follow us. If you don't do the iTunes, you can do SoundCloud. But we really prefer iTunes because then you can rate and review us. We get some stars.
We love the reviews. If you guys write funny reviews, we will read them
on the air. Yeah, exactly. We will do that. Also, make sure that you support us on our Patreon, patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. You will not regret it. So much great bonus content from Adam Johnson. Everyone loves Adam Johnson.
He was great.
He was great, right?
Yeah.
Walking encyclopedia. Matt Carr bonus. Actual doctor Adam Gaffney. We got a lot of, well, I don't want to say that because I don't want to discourage people from giving, but let's just say we got a big uptick in Patreon donations because people know, they know that they got to listen to Adam Gaffney.
Yes.
Adam Gaffney, kind of like Gabe, he's an honorary Jew. I don't want to out him. He's not Jewish. I mean...
So many Jewish mothers disappointed. They think, oh, look at this doctor.
Doctor. He's a doctor.
Eligible.
A single payer advocate. He bridges that divide between lefty moms and just your traditional Jewish moms.
Right.
Right? Because he's a doctor.
He's the best of both worlds.
Yes. Within the Jewish world.
Yes.
Which is the only world that we live in.
Right. Because we're located in New York City.
Exactly. Yeah. That would be funny. We could do a test. I mean, this is a little problematic and we're bordering on eugenics. But we could do a test where people would have to guess whether you or Adam are Jewish.
Yeah, I mean, when I go out for commercial auditions or anything, they always, it's me and like a, as a Latino, and then they just me and a bunch of other dudes that don't look anything like me.
Right.
And I should really just go out when they're casting for like...
Fiddler on the Roof.
Nebbish Jewish computer programmers.
Exactly. Or Tevye.
Tevye? What's Tevye?
Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, gotcha.
If I were a rich man,
yes.
I would...
All day long, I bitty bitty bum. If I were a wealthy man,
showing my ignorance of the diaspora art scene.
You know what? It's okay because we're going to find out a lot about that. But again, make sure you go to patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. That's patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. We got that Adam Gaffney bonus. Then we got James Adomian, which is one of the funniest things. He's McCain. He's John McCain. So funny. You know, the thing about James Adomian, of course, is a comedian, and he most recently was in the Bernie versus Trump tour, which was also a Fusion special. What is so cool about James is that he was a theater econ major, which doesn't really mean like you need to do that to do really smart political comedy, but it's more a sign of his interests. So when he does his impersonations of politicians.
Right. He like Jesse the Body Ventura.
Exactly. He really brings like an intelligence and an analysis to it. So like when he impersonates John McCain, he says, I will, if there's one thing I can promise, is I will bring down the gooks. And of course, that's a reference to John McCain's refusal to stop using the word gooks, only for his captors.
Yes.
And again, as we brought up, it would be like if I had been assaulted by, you know, four black men, let's say, and I called them the N-word, but only for them, and all other black men I called. It would be funny if I called them really woke names, African Americans. I mean, that's like expired woke, but
yeah,
it'd be funny if I became like really into Angela Davis. I was like a big Assata Shakur defender.
But with this very small sliver
of racism,
of the, yeah,
of applied racism,
just like laser precise,
exactly,
racism.
Laser precise racism, yeah. So here's some fan mail we got in response to the episode from last week.
Sure,
this is from Ephraim Duke, and his comment is "whiny leftist babbling." In quotes, quote, "whiny leftist babbling." End quote. There, saved you 41 minutes. And I wrote, thanks for the listen and contributing to our listen count. And he wrote, well played. And then had a smiley face and a clapping hand. Now, Ephraim Duke, his avatar is black, but his clapping hand emoji is white.
Yes.
Just saying. Maybe he's conflicted. Maybe that's not him in the avatar. Maybe those hands aren't actually his. Get it? It's an emoji. They're not actually his. But he gave it a like also, so maybe we converted him. What
do you think? You know what? Maybe he wanted the attention. He He wanted the validation.
Exactly.
And that's what we're here for at the Katie Halpin
Show. We are here for that, yeah.
We'll listen, guys. We listen to your feedback.
We do, yeah. Remember we found some great feedback from someone who really was a big fan of yours. Yeah. I don't know where that is, but I'll find it because we got to bring you the comments.
Somebody on Twitter said that I have to speak louder into the microphone.
Really?
Yeah, that's the only feedback. Note I got.
You know what you got to do. Oh, yeah, the volume level should be adjusted. When the interview starts, the volume drops significantly. Damn, Matt Karp sure does talk fast. That's another one.
Well, stop listening to the podcast at 1.5 speed. Oh, if you can't handle how fast it is.
You know, Gabe, I like the way you assume that that's what people do.
Because that's what I do. I listen to all my podcasts at 1.5 speed. I do that on my iPhone.
Yeah, your iPhone, right? Yeah.
You know, there's a plug for a product that's not paying me.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Oh, we got someone quoting Adam Johnson. That's actually helpful because we can then make little Instagram images out of that. Remember, guys, we really want you to quote us and our guests. We'll even take you quoting our guests. That's how tolerant we are. Usually we like, wouldn't it be funny if we only wanted stuff on us? Like we only wanted to make Instagrams on about us, not about.
I mean, you can roast us too.
Yeah, roast us. Yeah.
I'd love a critical quote.
Yeah, well, Gabe already responded so well to your constructive criticism. Oh, you know, I found something else. My mom found it for me, actually. It was some discussion on Reddit, and someone said, does anyone else find like it hard to listen to Katie Halper? Did I bring this up already?
I think you, yeah.
Because she sounds like a Jewish aunt.
Yeah, but then somebody's defending you as being like really
attractive.
Sexy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So thanks, guys. You know, okay, question. Would you rather someone say you're stupid and attractive or unattractive and smart?
I mean, I'm pretty vain.
Yeah, so you would say...
You get, like, I just noticed you get away with a lot more stuff if you look good.
Right, so you would say you would rather attractive and stupid, right?
It's always great to be underestimated.
Intellectually, like a sleeper attack.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, you want to fly under the radar.
Exactly. You know, I would also say the same thing. Because I think that for a lot of people, especially as a woman, I'm pretty confident in my intelligence.
Yes.
You know, and I think there's some women who I think are seen as like, as they're just objectified as physically attractive and not taken seriously intellectually. Mm-hmm. And they probably want the other thing. They want to be seen as smart and unattractive.
Right.
No one wants to be seen as unattractive, but probably the thing that they... In other words, if someone says Katie Halper's stupid, I'm like, uh-huh, sure.
Here's the secret, the real secret. Everyone is dumb and unattractive. So,
if inside.
Right. Hey, guys, am I speaking to your inner child?
Yeah.
You're all dumb and unattractive. But we all have that...
Insecurity
on the inside. And really, what do we know? We know very little about the universe, about what's going on inside of our bodies.
Usually people say that stuff like, we all have that insecurity inside. And then they offer a positive affirmation. But you know what? You're beautiful and you're smart.
We don't look like pages from a magazine, but that's all right. Oh, baby, that's all right.
But you're like, and you know what? That's not off, because what the hell do we know? So embrace you're not like push back, stop, you know, tell that inner voice to be quiet, challenge that inner voice that's telling you you're stupid. You're like, embrace it, because you're right. That's the smartest you get, is when you acknowledge your own stupidity.
That's right. Understanding that you have limited access to information,
right,
and you also have a limited ability to actually process the information that you're taking in.
Right.
And we're all fallible. Sure, there's maybe 4 hours of the day when I'm lucid.
Yeah.
And when I'm functioning at a high level. And then there are times where I'm on the couch binging on an entire pint of ice cream.
Ooh. I could eat unlimited ice cream.
And watching Veep. Five episodes of Veep in a row.
But lots of times you watch smart things about like the drug war and Latin America. So I wouldn't beat yourself up too much. Well, when you were a little kid, did you feel more insecure about your looks or your intelligence?
Oh, well, I got held back in second grade.
Really?
Yes. But it's because I went to a school that was failing. And so it closed at the end of second grade for me. And then I had to restart it. in a new school.
Oh, so that doesn't count.
It doesn't count. Right. I also started young, so
right,
I was
young. Right, because you're a December.
Yeah, exactly.
Baby, right.
So they were like, oh, let's just put him in second grade.
Why
again.
Why not? Yeah.
Which was fine, but I think there were a couple years where I thought, oh man, I failed out of second grade. I'm a dum dum.
So your parents didn't like sufficiently explain it to you.
Right. So this is just me overcompensating for that, spewing my opinions on the radio.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad that happened then. I'm glad you had that trauma. I thought you were going to be like, I was held back in second grade, but it was because of my looks, not intelligence. So,
well,
yeah.
You know, and I just, yeah.
Were you a scrawny kid? Were you a little scrawny kid?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was a chubby kid.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not the svelte, wiry, wasting away woman you see before you. But no, I was chubby kid. So I think most people...
You daphnous waif.
Yeah, exactly. I'm low-key thick, as I like to say. I think most people...
Like a delicious milkshake.
Yeah, but with some shape to it. Like
a
delicious milkshake in an hourglass stein, if you will, an hourglass mug.
I've been doing a lot of animalistic exercises in my apartment.
Really? Like what?
I don't like to go to the gym, but I'll do a lot of
grasshopper
like,
hops.
I do the hops.
Really?
And I'll do bear crawls along my floor.
Oh.
Yeah, and then I'll do backwards bear crawls, and I'll do crab walks. You know, I'm just trying to. I want to be a ninja.
You could do my thing. You know what my signature exercise move is? Duck walk. It's just how I walk. I waddle. I have a waddle.
I think in my self-image, I was that sick kid from The Simpsons.
But because you were the sick kid.
I was, I was a little wheezy, asthmatic kid. I think my self-image, I identify a little bit with diaspora boy.
Oh, yeah, you good know? Transition. Yeah, we're going to get into that right now in a second.
But,
which is why you're an honorary Jew. Your honorary Jewdom started not just with your asthma, which already throws you into the Jewish category, but also with your perception of yourself as a little wheezy kid.
Yeah. But I got to say this, you know, once you accept and embrace that you're not the smartest and you're not the hottest.
Another pep talk from Gabe.
You work with what you got.
Exactly.
And enjoy the tiny sliver of time that you have on this planet.
I was a long time coming. I'll be a long time gone. You got your whole life to do something.
You're like, enjoy the mediocrity and then be dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, just don't work that hard.
I wouldn't have to work hard.
And use your free time to the best of your ability.
If I were rich, I'd have the time that I like to sit in the synagogue and pray. And I discuss the holy books with the learned men 7 hours every day.
Watching Veep and eating ice cream.
And that would be the sweetest thing of all.
Today we're going to be talking to Ellie Valley, whose name is spelled E-L-I, but don't be fooled. It's Ellie, not Eli. That's Ellie Valley. He's a writer and artist whose work has been featured in The Nation, The New Republic, The Daily Beast, The Nib, The Village Voice, Gawker, and elsewhere. And he was selected for the annual anthology, The Best American Comics of 2017. He was the 2011 to 2013 artist in residence at the Forward newspaper.
The oldest Jewish newspaper in the country.
Yeah. And his art, that's still around.
Yes.
Yes. And his art has been labeled ferociously repugnant by commentary and hilarious by the Comics Journal. Ellie's comics collection, Diaspora Boy, Comics on Crisis in America and Israel, which was released in 2017 from Or Books. His website is www.ellievalley.com. So, ladies and gents, and people of all genders, please welcome Ellie Valley. Yay. This is our new thing where we do a clap, right? Ellie Valley. Hey. We're so happy to have Ellie Valley live in the studio. He's going to be talking to us about his new book. It's called Diaspora Boy, Comics on Crisis in America and Israel. And it's a really good book. Like, I'm not just saying that. It's a great book. Ellie is an extremely talented artist. And I knew that, but I didn't know. Like, I kind of assumed, because you're a smart, funny guy, I assumed that your writing was good, but I hadn't read it as much. And his writing is really good. Not just the writing about the comics, but your writing in the intro to this book. So this book is huge.
It's rich in text and illustrations.
Yes.
That's not me talking. I just want people to know that
course.
I'm not flattering myself.
No, this is Gabe Pacheco right here saying this book is it's dense in a good way.
Yeah.
And lends itself to multiple readings.
Now, what is this? It's what by what? It's not 8x11 even. It's...
No, it's 12x14, I believe. I don't know if it's our ruler in this podcast too.
Yeah, no,
it's
about
12x14.
12x14.
Yeah, because the broadsheet comics, they kind of need a larger viewing format.
Right. It's from Orbook. Shout out to... So, you have a foreword by Peter Beinart, journalist, reformed, post-Zionist, maybe still Zionist?
I think he probably would consider himself still Zionist,
So I just wanted to read the opening paragraph of your book before we get into the comics. Actually, could you read it since you wrote it?
Sure, sure. Thanks. Should I grab it here?
Or I could just impersonate you reading it,
do you
want
to do that?
Do it. No.
Okay. Where were the victims? It was a cold day in Warsaw, and I couldn't find them. I was standing in front of a statue, and it had everything, or at least everything you'd want from socialist realist diorama. A feather-haired woman clutching a rifle, another woman oblivious to her blown-away blouse, even a baby at the top, its arms raised in a battle-ready pose. The whole scene was unabashed pulp, and I loved it. Still, it seemed like an odd image, given the location. This wasn't a random spot for Soviet resistance art. Unveiled by sculptor Nathan Rappaport 5 years after the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising and less than 1 month before the establishment of the State of Israel, these fierce fighters emerging from flames were built atop the ruins of the ghetto in such haste that burnt-out debris was incorporated, along with tons of concrete, into the monument's base. I'd expected victims, martyrs, something about the people who died. Over 400,000 Jews in the ghetto had been murdered through starvation, disease, and deportations to Treblinka before the nearly month-long uprising began. It ended when the Germans burned, bombed, and gassed every remaining building in the district. Surely there was more to memorialize at the site of absolute devastation, a still smoldering graveyard when the statue was unveiled, than modern-day Maccabees. And yet, aside from a single prostrate figure in the corner, this was a paean to human, really superhuman, triumph. And not only triumph, but victory of a specific sort. The figures were modeled on Jews visiting Europe from kibbutzim in Palestine. By chance, I wandered around to the other side of the statue, and that's where I found them, a smaller procession of 12 people, hunched over and headed to their slaughter. Unlike the heroes in front, who were literally bursting from granite blocks originally intended for a Hitler victory monument in Berlin, these figures were cut in base relief into the stone itself. The procession was meant to recall the Arch of Titus and the Roman destruction of Jerusalem. Here, the horrors that had devastated the largest Jewish community in Europe were suggested, but only as a footnote. In every sense, the figures were shadows, hidden away as a source of shame.
One more.
All right. I was shocked. How could they bifurcate heroism and victimhood? Isn't that a grotesque oversimplification, not to mention an obscene insult to those who were murdered? Even the inscription reinforced the binary. To the Jewish people, it's heroes and martyrs. Yes, there was context, Soviet constraints and censorship, unabated instability in both Europe and the Middle East, the ordeal of rebirth in a city completely destroyed by Nazis. But still, as a piece of Jewish art and iconography, it seemed larger than that. And that's what it has become, a Jewish icon multiplied to the point of definitive self-image. Rappaport's heroes have been reproduced everywhere, from postcards to postage stamps. A replica stands outside the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial in Jerusalem. Both sides facing front, here the victims magnified to focus on the suffering. It is now the archetype of Jewish self-imagery. As Rappaport himself said, could I have made a stone with a hole in it and said, voila, the heroism of the Jews?
So what is it that you're getting at with this opening and this discussion of the bifurcation of heroism and victimhood? Because I kind of think that that's something that pervades not only your book, but Jewish identity and history.
Yeah, well, recent Jewish history, at least, with the emergence of Zionism in the, last century, and also the sort of dominance of Zionism in terms of Jewish educational constructs throughout the world. They essentially bifurcated all of Jewish history into heroism and slaughter. I mean, it's one reason why when Jewish American tourists visit Europe, they're surprised to hear that it's more than a graveyard, that Jewish history began earlier than the 1930s when there was, such a huge uptick in hatred.
So you're saying that this in the 20th century we've seen like a reduction of Jewish history into like an essentialism, like
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm simplifying a little bit, but the good thing about Zionism is it's such an oversimplification itself that you don't have to go much further. Yeah, it's already hyperbole, which is right. why these comics can be fun to draw.
Right. You talk about something that I'm not sure non-Jews know about, this bifurcation of heroism and victimhood, as you say, and this bifurcation of Jewish identity into assimilated or diaspora Jews and Israel Jews,
yeah.
or allegedly Israel Jews, because, of course, most of them are diaspora Jews that went back there.
Using the term aliyah, meaning rise up.
Right.
Even the vernacular uses terms of, elevation and submersion. When they leave, they're yiridah. They're going down, literally. That's their term for it.
So you're aliyah or aliyah?
Either way.
The singer?
Yeah, I think.
is that what she was named after? But making to make aliyah, right, is for non-Israeli born Jews who moved to Israel, right?
Yeah, it's a term within Jewish and Israeli vernacular, meaning that they moved to Israel. And, you know, Israel gives these benefits to people who make aliyah, but the actual term, it's also when you get called to the Torah in the Jewish world, you know, that's why you say aliyah. It's like, that's the accent we use in the Ashkenazic world, I think.
Like, what type of benefits do they get?
I actually don't know the financial benefits, but there are a bunch of do you know about this? I don't.
It's like
I don't
moving
know.
To Alaska, where you get money for this. Living there from the government.
I did not know this.
Yeah, yeah. Alaska's got a universal basic income.
Whoa.
Well, like, you know, they give everybody a couple $1,000s for tolerating the weather.
Right.
I think it might be a certain amount of money, but I think more it might be like sort of assistance with housing, possibly, or loans or something. But I actually don't know, and I don't want to be on the record as saying these things, and then
that's
the Israeli embassy sues us.
Yeah,
right.
Don't worry, hey guys, Google it, check it out, see if you can find out what
benefits
the benefits
of Aliyah. I'm sure you know you can Google it right now.
Right.
It also sounds like a great name for a band.
It does.
Benefits of Aliyah.
Let's do it, guys. Let's do it.
It's probably taken in Tel Aviv.
And we only play klezmer music. You go through this kind of hatred that's been imposed, this contempt for diaspora or assimilated Jews, which is, of course, propaganda to justify not only the state of Israel or Zion, but to get people to move there.
And support it.
And support
it, right?
And
do everything we can in America to justify some atrocious policies.
Right. You know, it could be helpful to actually talk about your actual description of the diaspora boy versus Israel man.
That was very interesting for me, being an outsider. It was a great entry point into what could be seen as like inside baseball, a Jewish on Jewish critique.
Yes.
But for, you know, Gabe Pacheco, the guy who doesn't know all about it, that comic really shined a light, illuminated everything.
Yeah. What page is that on? I think that'd be really
the actual comic, Israel Man Diaspora Boy.
The one where you see them side by side and it describes them.
33.
Okay, let's go to that one.
Basically, in that one, I just took Zionist thought and, polemics and tweaked it just a little bit, which is why I say in the introduction, no Zionist ideologue in the world understands that comic, because it's like, you know, what are you talking about? This is normal. This is, you just illustrated reality. Yeah, maybe open up a little bit. Actually, illustrating horrifying ideology.
Right, that's interesting. So they see it as what's wrong with this? It's new. It's a
this is an American
now I'm
Jew.
Doing,
the American Jew
right,
is crippled. Yes.
Right.
How is this satire?
And when you say that, you're saying that when you show this to Israeli Zionists or American Zionists?
Especially Israeli Zionists. I mean, there are Israelis who are not Zionists.
Sure.
But, generally, if you're going to find a random Israeli, they will, you know, believe in certain founding myths of its state.
They'll be like, is this an actual? They're like, this is a secondary source. It's great. It's how we should teach the difference between diaspora.
Well, it says up here. Approved for Zionist
education. So what we're describing are these two characters and that Ellie has created, Israel Man and Diaspora Boy. And I think it's helpful to start with this because this lays out the kind of bifurcation, as you describe it, of these two identities. And just so people understand, this is basically this preceded the Holocaust, but the Holocaust really upped the ante. It really heightened the narrative because you have the narrative of diaspora Jews, which is again are Jews who don't live in Israel, seen as kind of, you know, like Woody Allen's, seen as Woody Allen
with leprosy,
Like pasty
and eczema.
Oh yeah, we'll get
His collected oeuvre.
Yeah. So let's describe, and this is an interesting thing to describe comics over the radio, but I think it's good. So we have, the title of this comic is Israel Man and Diaspora Boy. On the top of the, is this called a panel? The top of the, or is it just a comic?
It's like a cover. I did it like okay. with a comics code kind of thing on the
right. All
right,
cool. So it says on the top, Jewish Mythology Comics presents Israel Man and Diaspora Boy. On the top left corner, it says one shekel or $75,000. I don't get that. Is that just a currency?
Well, just saying, you know, shekels are so valuable.
Yeah,
that's the trade.
And then on the top right, there's a comic stamp. Is that what did you just call
the
it?
The Comics Code Authority, which was instituted in 1954, like a self-censorship device. But I use that sort of same emblem. But
cool.
But it says approved for Zionist.
Do you know these terms? Because you know a lot about comics. Okay,
yeah,
Gabe is like
books.
Rolling his eyes. I can't get over my ignorance at comics.
Well, actually, the Comics Code is a separate issue we can discuss, because that also the pre-code comics are basically the inspiration for a lot of my work.
Okay. So this is approved for Zionist educators everywhere. And then what you have is a very strong looking muscular figure that says that has like the superhero label of I, which of course stands for Israel Man. Mm-hmm. He's very tall, he's muscular, he's wearing a cape, he's kind of handsome. Has a major six pack, and then you also have a goblin looking figure who's comes up to basically Israel Man's
thighs
with a crutch.
Yeah, he's holding a crutch. Also, the Zionist sort of masculine obsession. Sort of attributes to diaspora Jewish men, feminine qualities as well. So I have him with breasts. He's lactating as well.
Oh, okay. So he has breasts. He's lactating. He's drooling just to make him, I guess, unattractive.
Yeah.
Let me
surrounded
know.
By flies.
Surrounded by flies.
Wart-ridden.
Warts. Has like long nails.
Fangs.
Has like, instead of a cape, he has like a shmata, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah.
Like he's, a rag. It's with patches.
He's on the cover too. I reproduced him coming out.
Oh, yeah.
So what's wrong with that image? What's
oh, glasses. How we can't forget glasses. He's bald, he has some patchy hair, and then you have wheezing and gasping. And then should we read this and then we can talk about what's wrong with the image?
Yeah,
I'm just trying to figure out the order of stuff.
Yeah, well, that might help.
Yeah.
Okay,
do you read it?
No,
okay.
So this is the description of what we see, yeah.
Yeah, it's on the cover. It also has another cover of the book, but on this drawing. Revel in the euphoria of Zionist thought. Marvel at the birth of the new Jew. Thrill to the words of Max Nordau, a founder and leader of modern Zionism, who called the diaspora Jew a cripple within and a counterfeit person without, so that like everything unreal, he is ridiculous and hateful to all men of high standards.
Okay, and that's true. That's an actual quote.
That's a quote, yeah, by one of the founders of Zionism. And then Diaspora Boy on the cover of this piece of this page says, "My entire existence is a useless waste, Israel Man." And Israel Man responds, "Have no fear, Diaspora Boy. I am here to replace you."
Nice. Okay, and then
so the like an Ubermensch, a man of the future.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a very, very 1930s Germany vibe to it.
Man of Tomorrow on the anatomy of our heroes. It says.
Oh yeah. So this is another page, right? Another.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's like three page this comic.
Okay.
What's cool about the second page is like you basically have like a T diagram where you have. You have the man of tomorrow, Israel Man, basically boasting about all of the things that he's good at. And then on the other side of the page, you have Diaspora Boy.
Harbinger of death.
And every a litany of all of his, I don't know what the right word would be for those.
Defects, weaknesses.
Yes, yeah, dysfunctions.
They all correspond to Israel Man's superlatives.
Yeah.
So
we could do a couple of those.
Yeah, let's do it. So on the top of this page, it says Anatomy of Our Heroes. And then the heroes are Israel Man, quote-unquote man of tomorrow, and his pathetic sidekick, Diaspora Boy, harbinger of death. And so, like Gabe was saying, it's a T. What is it? This is interesting.
Like a T chart.
A T
so
chart.
So you're basically... Yeah,
to compare it.
Yeah,
yeah. So you want to read them Israel Boy and then...
Israel Man.
Do you want to do? Oh, what, Gabe? Which one? Why don't you play one and you play the other?
Yeah. Do you want to? Do you want
to? I'm happy to do whatever, man.
I mean, as someone who wheezes, I'm just saying, but we don't have to.
Okay. So I'll do Israel Man, and you read the diaspora next to it.
I'll yeah. You want me to be as stereotypically diaspora boyish as possible?
No, because I mean you can if you want, but these aren't meant to be said in their voice. It's supposed to be the objective. So I'll read Israel Man. Able to see 10,000 years into the future.
Physically, psychologically, and spiritually blind.
Perfect nose evolved from Greco-Roman ideal.
Proboscis, repulsively enlarged due to faulty respiratory system allergies.
Skin sunbronze from fields of farming and battle.
Suffers from eczema, ringworm, shingles, boils, leprosy, and acne. Even sunlight despises him.
Pectorals can stop bullets.
Man breasts cannot stop lactating.
Should we go on?
Sure. Yeah,
okay. Scent of trees, fields, mountains, and fresh springs.
Odor of garlic, mildewed books, rampaging Cossacks.
And that's a reference to the smells coming out of their armpits.
Yeah, I should mention each of these things has arrows going to part of their anatomy.
Right.
Then an arrow going towards his waist. Spine straightened with pride and self-confidence.
Spine crushed from centuries of servility and self-hatred.
And then an arrow going towards his loins. Seed used to make the desert bloom.
Oh, sounds great. Hasn't had an erection since the destruction of the second temple.
And then another arrow towards his rear. Moves his bowels with optimum regularity. Feces used as currency in developing nations.
Cannot defecate without 5,000 milligrams magnesium hydroxide, 4 gallons of prune juice, and a heating pad.
Clothing harks back to that of prophets and kings.
Clothing borrowed from Gentile culture.
Very nice.
Oh, and then of course he's.
Oh yeah,
because Israel Man is so much taller than Diaspora Boy has to be standing on a bunch of books and whichever you want to read a couple of the titles of the books. These are the books that you can find in Diaspora Boy's library.
Yeah, How to Love Your Anti-Semitic Gentile Wife, Dwindling Population Studies, Volume MCCLXX111, Exile: The Religion of Self-Hatred. The Hypochondriac's Cookbook, Woody Allen's Collected Oeuvre, How to Live Without a National Culture, The Parasite, God's Greatest Creature, Encyclopedia of Fear and Paranoia, and then finally, 1,000 Reasons to Support Israel.
Nice. I feel like a lot of Israel's identity and kind of Zionism is based on a masculine insecurity. Thank you. And this idea of, you know, there's the image of diaspora Jews or Ashkenazi Jews, right? Because, of course, there's the Sephardic Ashkenazi divide. And most Jews in Israel are actually Ashkenazi, but they, right?
I don't even know. I don't know the breakdown.
So.
Are they?
Okay. I think, yeah, because Sephardim, they're called something, Mizrahi.
Yeah.
They face some racism or oppression, whatever.
But I thought they might face it despite being
maybe. Because the Ashkenazi run everything.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ashkenazi are the Jews of the Jews, basically.
Well, the Mizrachim are the Jews of the Jews in terms of being subjugated in that regard.
Right.
But in terms of that.
Like in terms of who runs the government, who runs the media, all the stereotypes.
Yeah.
About what's interesting is whenever we say something in the United States, when we say something is Jewy or Jewish, we always mean, look at your eyes, but
no,
Ellie got nervous.
Oh. No.
We always mean Ashkenazi. We don't say this, but basically all the stereotypes that we use in the United States are Ashkenazi stereotypes. And roughly you can break down the Israel Man versus Diaspora Boy divide to Sephardic versus Ashkenazi. Now, they may not be Sephardic, the Israelis that we're talking about, but that's kind of the legacy that they're invoking.
You know, that's an interesting view of it. I'll be honest that the Sephardi-Ashkenazi divide and cultural differences didn't really play a part in this because I was talking about an ideology that was essentially, you know, born in Europe. And, and so I don't know if either of them would be equated to Sephardi or Mizrahi Jews, although I would be curious about those kinds of readings. It just wasn't in my sort of writerly intent, so to speak.
And I think it's not articulated. I guess I'm just using that as kind of shorthand code. I think it's in there because basically the image of the Israeli Jew is one that's bronzed, one that can work the land and is strong, right?
Right. Well, on the other hand, though, they also demean Mizrahi culture there.
Right.
And so from that perspective, Mizrahi
Exactly. I agree. Yeah. I think we're saying the same thing, and yeah, it's this weird contradiction,
which is true.
Because basically Israel is Ashkenazi run, right. And they don't elevate Sephardic culture. But I think that because Sephardic Jews, okay, a little history thing, right? Sephardic Jews are the Jews who went to Spain and Portugal and North Africa, right?
And the Middle East. Yeah.
Ashkenazi Jews are the ones who went to Eastern Europe. Right?
Pretty much, yeah.
So even though they don't articulate this difference, the actual physical traits that they're elevating in Israel are ones that more or less can be associated, not to sound like Hitlerian or whatever, but because Sephardic Jews are the ones who look more like the original Israelis. So they're darker, they're tanner, they're...
more outdoorsy?
Yeah, I think that's true, right? And Ashkenazi Jews are the ones who represent... Again, no one makes it, the narrative is diaspora versus non-diaspora, but the Ashkenazi Jews are that. They're the pastier ones, right? They live in the pale. They don't get as much sunlight. All these stereotypes, right? They're more assimilated. They are victims of pogroms.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's not articulated, but I think it's an interesting thing that we see throughout Israel. Also, again, the Holocaust is so defining and it's so used to justify the state of Israel, but it's also, there's some contempt for it and shame.
Yes, absolutely. Right?
And that's what you talk about in the opening with the monument.
Yeah. I just want to add to what you were saying in terms of like the bronze look.
Yeah.
There was a whole sort of movement, I think in the 60s and 70s in Israel, of sort of like fetishizing Arab culture, you know, while also...
killing them.
Exactly. But I mean, it's like, you know, people who wear Native American dress in America, it's like, you know, so, but...
Urban Outfitters.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole thing, bronze and certain aspects of music, etc., were sort of like, you know, but I was also like comparing it to how it was before the destruction of the Second Temple, when they considered Jews to be fighters, victorious, etc. And like everything between the destruction of the Second Temple and 1948 is a wasteland.
Right. So it's butch versus femme also.
Yeah. Yeah.
But is there something too where in like in an assimilated culture or when you are in diaspora, this pressure where Jewish people were put under, like, because this is a reading I have as not being part of the Jewish community, but this pressure of like be taking certain roles in society or only having certain social outlets. Whereas in Israel, since it's a Jewish state, mm-hmm. Jews run the spectrum.
Right.
So like they're more, what is it? Like they get to be everything. They get to be, and in that, right. Is that where some of this, some the stereotypes come from that the Israelis have around diaspora?
Some of the later kind of stereotypes come from that, but a lot of my sort of satirical targets are the ideologies that were at play before the State of Israel emerged even. But yes, even before the State of Israel emerged, Herzl and other Zionist thinkers were talking about how normalization, as they called it, would mean that Israel would be like a country like any other country in the world, and Jews would be everything from, you know, prostitutes, which of course Jews already had been because, you know,
not a lot of work options.
Oh, okay.
Limited opportunities.
Jews were in every
right,
field.
Right.
It's a myth that we were only, you know, in certain kinds of fields. But anyways, according to like Herzl and others, Jews would finally be normalized and they would be taxi drivers, etc.
The great Jewish aspiration of every mother. That their sons become taxi drivers.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk just briefly, I know this is a big thing, but about like the founding of Israel for our listeners who aren't.
About like, what do you mean?
Just like what happened, how it happened, 1948.
Well, you had one comic strip that actually dealt with anti-Semitism in England.
Oh, yeah.
There's the British character who is anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
And does that deal with sort of like the ideas around the founding of Israel?
Not so much, actually. This comic, to be honest, sorry.
No, I don't care.
Undermine what you,
dude. What do I know? I'm just.
No, I don't. I don't really like love that comic now, but I'm including it from the point of view of sort of like you know, completism.
Yeah.
From that perspective, but it was a little bit of left punching. But at the time, I was like really pissed at certain aspects of British. I think, you know, anti-Semitism is a legitimate term to use, the way certain British, especially moneyed British attitudes have played out concerning Israel and Jews, actually. So there's a comic called A Modern Fable, and this comic was from 2007, and is a reaction to one, you know, horrifying aspect of Abe Foxman's long list of shadows on the ADL, and this was his urging Congress not to pass a resolution recognizing the facts of the Armenian genocide.
And the ADL is the Anti-Defamation League.
Yeah, the Anti-Defamation League. And he did that largely because at the time, Turkey had a much stronger relationship with Israel, and I think it's getting strong again, but it kind of went down a bit during that whole incident.
Flotilla.
The flotilla incident, yeah. But anyway, at the time, this is pre-flotilla, and Turkish government denies the facts of the genocide, of course, and so Foxman was trying to, you know, make sure that Israel's relationships were as solid as possible, despite, you know, in the process, inverting the very core purpose of the Anti-Defamation League, you know, which is to point out things like, you know, genocide, you know. So he was like a genocide denialist, which is just like it's an everlasting shame, and it should be forever affixed to his name.
You just sounded so Jewish. It is an everlasting shame, and may it forever be affixed to his name.
I'm sorry about that, but
don't apologize.
Okay. Yeah, but yeah, whatever. So in the comic, I basically have a woman who is like, you know, she hears that Abe Foxman will do things if you give him a certain amount of money, because she heard about the Mark Rich affair, in which Mark Rich had given $100,000 to the ADL, and Abe had urged a presidential pardon. Mark Rich was this money launderer, sleazebag, essentially, who Bill Clinton pardoned at the end of his term,
and Foxman pressured Clinton to pardon him, right?
Well, he was one of the people that, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but urge. He advocated for Mark Rich to get the pardon, yeah. And anyway, so in the comic, this woman hears about that, and she's a 92-year-old Armenian-American, so she raises money all across the country to try and get Abe Foxman enough money to actually have values, you know, or to, you know, have a moral core.
Consistency about genocide and bigotry.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to give spoilers, but that's basically the narrative thrust of the comic.
Right. And so we just see here, what I like is, like, your comics really bring up a lot of hypocrisy around what certain people say that they stand for, and then what the real politics behind it. And so, like, just the fact that you'd think that if you're standing against genocide being perpetuated anywhere in the world, that it's so disheartening to see that like a national treaty or a deal with Turkey is going to undermine, you know, or negate acknowledging a horrific thing that happened to the Armenian people.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have this famous line of never again, right? Which is saying never again, what happened in the Holocaust, never again, may it never happen again. But there's a lot of, like, it's a little disturbing how for some people that's a very, very particular and specific thing, never again to Jews, as opposed to a universal never again. You know, it's this proprietary genocide.
Yeah.
It's like genocide.
TM
of the Jews, yeah.
This comic ran the week Foxman fired the ADL's regional New England director for disavowing Foxman's position and for backing a resolution in the U.S. Congress recognizing the fact of the genocide. In the ensuing outrage, Foxman was forced into a rare concession. Quote, "We've never denied that there was a massacre. We just didn't engage in the G word," Foxman told the Forward. Quote, "Now they're insisting on the G word. Fine." Unquote. His carefully worded new position, conceding that the, quote, consequences of the, quote, painful events were, quote, tantamount to genocide, did not assuage the concerns of Armenian-American activists. His continued opposition to a congressional resolution infuriated the same groups as well as many in the Jewish community. The stain on the ADL endured for another 9 years. It was only after Foxman's retirement that the organization was free to unequivocally recognize the genocide as genocide.
Right. So, right, in theory, we don't want the Anti-Defamation League to just be anti-defamation of Jews, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not called the Anti-Jewish Defamation League. It's the Anti-Defamation League.
Yeah.
But there lacks a kind of universalism.
It waters down its potency if it's only
right.
Shrill around Jewish issues.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you got to be shrill around all...
Shrill, yeah.
Well, that's how you get attention. You got to...
Cackle.
Yeah.
Cackle around all around all issues. It's true. And then it perpetuates the idea that Jews are this kind of mafia that only cares about other Jews. And one of the best things, one of the things that, the few things that gives me Jewish pride, but one of the best things, this book, Ellie says, is Ellie's book, Ellie's comics, Ellie's writing, my own work, this radio show, the work of Gabe, the comedy of Gabe,
the honorary Jew.
Yeah. Is the universalistic, the tradition of universalism that has existed, and the, you know, the Jews historically have engaged in struggles and allied themselves with struggles. This has been largely eclipsed by the uber-nationalism of Israel and the Zionist project. But, you know, we have Jews, like, in the Spanish Civil War, the most common...
Abbie Hoffman was Jewish.
Abbie Hoffman was Jewish, major internationalist, levitated the Pentagon. You may have heard of it. But, you know, Yiddish was the most popular language among all the international brigades who fought in Spain against Franco. I mean, that's just an example. But a lot of, you know, internationalism, universalism.
After Abe Foxman's been gone, the ideal has thankfully been, especially under Trump, much more, you know, combative when it comes to other people's rights, especially Muslim Americans. Mm. However, on the Israel question, they are still,
of course,
you know.
Of course. But the ADL, God bless them, the God who doesn't exist. Actually, I mean, what's so weird and scary is, I don't know if you've experienced this, I've talked about this on the show before, but for someone like me who's constantly criticizing the way that the label of anti-Semitism is thrown around extremely casually, right? And usually used to describe someone who's not anti-Semitic, but is criticizing Israel, Israel's policies. Yeah. It's a weird experience for me under Trump to actually be saying, like, hey, that's anti-Semitic.
I know. It's bizarre. You know, bizarre. A lot of things have become inverted in the Trump
exactly,
era.
Exactly,
yeah. You know?
And so you have Jewish organizations that usually weaponize that term and exploit that term to describe any criticism of Israel. Like being whatever the opposite of vigilant is when we've talked about this, when Trump's administration on Holocaust Memorial Day doesn't mention Jews and doesn't mm-hmm. mention anti-Semitism, right?
Yeah, not only that, they've been tacitly accepting of people like Bannon, you know, people who
yes.
are allied with actual Nazis or Gorka, you know, the Zionist Organization of America. Tried to have like a dinner hosting Bannon and like celebrating him.
Right.
It's disgusting.
Doesn't ramping up anti-Semitism abroad increase the case that Israel has
need
to perpetuate
totally
a state?
True. I'm not saying they're doing that deliberately, but it's interesting how, you know.
I
don't think they actually want anti-Semitism
in
America.
No.
All they want is a safe and secure and militarily dominant Israel and anything else that will get in the way of that, basically. And so I'm not saying that that's the...
No, but you talk about the Paris... Can you briefly talk about the Paris thing where Netanyahu, after the attacks in Paris and Charlie Hebdo?
Yeah, Charlie Hebdo.
You write about it here.
I mean, basically, I mean, you know, after the horrifying attacks in Paris at the kosher supermarket and at Charlie Hebdo, Netanyahu came to Paris. And first of all, they were all talking about, like, moving all of French Jews to Israel. And he came to Paris and he told them that it's like, I forget, I actually quoted here, but it's something like, you know, comparable to the Inquisition, etc. And because it plays into, you know, Israel's conception, like Israel Man and Diaspora Boy, that the only safe place in the world is in Israel, you know?
And of course, what's interesting about that is it undercuts the justification it has for killing lots of Palestinians, for saying the Iran, you know, we need weapons and Iran shouldn't be able to develop whatever nuclear stuff.
Capabilities.
I'm a real expert on this stuff, on the terminology. But that is I remember thinking that at the same time. It's like you can't both boast that Israel is the safest space in the world for Jews and say you're constantly under the threat of
death crisis.
Yeah, thanks so much. What a great show, huh, Gabe?
I had so much fun with Ellie Valley in here.
Did you feel like you learned more about your Jewish identity?
I understand the Jewish identity more than I did before. So this was a transformational interview.
Yeah, you understand yourself in a way, if we consider you an honorary Jew.
I don't like having identities pushed on me.
You're a Jew. I'm not pushing it.
I'm happy being a Latino of Mexican descent. Thank you very much. But, you know, Jews are great. That's what I learned today.
Jews are great, and so are Mexicans.
Yeah, I was on the fence.
Mexican Jews are the best.
Yeah. Mexican Jews are awesome.
You know he's not actually Jewish.
I know.
It's just this thing that gets brought up on the radio every episode.
It's funny.
So,
I mean, maybe every four episodes.
This was a super Jewish episode, and I was happy to be part of it.
Thank you. I feel validated. All right, yeah. Cool. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Join our Patreon. We're going to have great bonus content with Ellie.
Yeah, guys. Rate and review us on iTunes.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Patreon.com/TheKDHelp for sure. The rest of our interview with Ellie, please become Patreon supporters at patreon.com/TheKatieHalper Show. The Katie Halper Show is produced by Florence Burrow Adams with help from Joshua Bregman, and our theme song is by The Ballet. Make sure you use the hashtag KTHalpShow, that's letter K, letter T, HALPSHOW, and follow us on Twitter, that's KTHalps, and Gabe_Pacheco. See you October 9th. At the live taping of the Katie Halper Show at the Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.